upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief, and I'm glad that you're here with us today. I don't know about you, but I'm getting really sick of the massive censorship that's going on with big tech. This is not leftist attacks. This is not communist attacks. It's not socialist attacks on free speech. It's a technocrat attack on free speech. The first story I want to discuss today is titled The Great American Purge of Skeptical Client Scientists. And yes, there has been so much division over whether the traditional establishment version of climate science is correct or not, because there is a host of scientists on the other side of the argument who insist that it's just a bunch of bull. And so because they can't win the intellectual argument, they decide to silence the critics of traditional climate science. This being pushed by the United Nations and other universities around the world that are bought off with academic grants. I wrote at the top of this article, a left-wing Australian advocacy teamed up with the elitist Center for American Progress in the United States to destroy the reputation of climate scientists who dared to debunk faulty global warming science. Dissent is simply not tolerated. These attacks have been vicious but persistent and well-funded. The Center for American Progress, CAP, of course, was founded by Trilateral Commission member John Podesta. Why can't we get away from these guys? Well, Podesta is a technocrat ideologue who almost single-handedly crafted global warming and environmental policies for the Clinton and Obama administrations. Podesta was a central figure in forming the Obama campaign and administration and was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager during the 2016 elections. CAP's largest financial donors include the Ford Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, and the Peter G. Peterson Foundation, and the Schwab Charitable Fund. And by the way, the late Peter G. Peterson, who founded the Peterson Institute, was also a prominent member of the Trilateral Commission. The article itself states a climate advocacy group called Skeptical Science hosts a list of academics that it is labeled climate misinformers. The list includes 17 academics and is intended as a blacklist. We know of this intent because one of the principals of Skeptical Science, a blogger named Dana Nudishelli, said so last Friday, writing of one academic on their list, quote, if you look at the statements we cataloged and debunked on her, that is on the Skeptical Science page, it should make her unhireable in academia. The so-called unhireable academia is Professor Judy Curry, formerly the chair of the School of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at Georgia Tech and a fellow at both the American Geophysical Union and the American Meteorological Society. By any conventional academic metric, Curry has compiled an impressive record over many decades. The idea that she would be unhireable would seem laughable. But there's nothing funny about skeptical science. Today, Curry should be a senior statesperson in the atmospheric sciences community. Instead, she is out of academia. She attributes that, at least in part, to being placed on skeptical science blacklist and its use, as expressed by Nudicelli, to make her unhireable. I asked Professor Curry about this situation. She explained, quote, in 2012, I was informed by my dean that the administration wanted me to step down as chair. While there were several reasons for this, one obvious reason was extreme displeasure by several activist climate scientists who had a very direct pipeline to the dean. So Curry stepped down and started looking for administrative positions at other universities. At the time, she said, I was getting numerous inquiries from academic headhunters encouraging me to apply for a major administration position, ranging from dean to vice chancellor for research. I applied for several of these and actually interviewed for two of them. I did not make it to the final shortlist. The headhunter gave Curry the following feedback from the universities. They thought I was an outstanding candidate, looking excellent on paper, articulated a strong vision, and interviewed very well in person. The showstopper was my public profile in the climate debate, as evidenced by a simple Google search. Indeed, in my own Google search of Judy Curry, and confirmed by others on my Twitter timeline, the Skeptical Science Blacklist page for her appears on the first page of Google results. And for me, it was the top listing. How can it be that a website founded by an Australian cartoonist named John Cook and run by mainly volunteer non-academics and amateur scientists can rise to the position of not just claiming to arbitrate who is and who is not an appropriate hire for universities, but actually fulfilling that role? Climate science emerged in 2007 at the peak of the climate blogging era. It was also a time when the pursuit of climate skeptics or deniers really took off. The website soon found a large audience and was promoted as an ally in the battle against climate skeptics and deniers. For instance, according to Wikipedia, quote, the Washington Post has praised it as the, quote, most prominent and detailed website to counter arguments by global warming deniers. But the main legitimatizing factor in the rise of skeptical science as a powerful climate advocacy group was its endorsement by prominent scientists, such as by widely known climate scientist Michael Mann of Penn State University and Catherine Hayhoe of Texas Tech. Like climate science, Mann and Hayhoe focused much of the advocacy efforts on identifying and denigrating so-called climate skeptics or deniers. The American Geophysical Union, the AGU, a leading academic association that includes many climate scientists, has routinely endorsed skeptical science. The AGU has even invoked the Skeptical Science Blacklist as recently as last December, when one of its writers dismissed an Australian academic by observing simply that he has his own page on John Cook's Skeptical Science website. The mere fact of being listed on the Skeptical Science Blacklist appears to be sufficient to be dismissed on the official website of the AGU, where Curry was elected a fellow. But what happened to Curry is just the tip of the iceberg. Upon discussing on Twitter the Skeptical Science claim that their debunking of Curry should make her unhirable in academia, a follower of mine pointed to a trove of hacked internal discussions among the Skeptical Science team. In those discussions from around 2010 to 2012, my father, Rother Pielke Sr., also a prominent atmospheric scientist, was mentioned some 3,700 times. Correspondingly, my father is also listed on the Skeptical Science Blacklist. I have read those internal discussions. What I saw is incredibly disturbing for academic freedom and for simple human decency. Let me take a step back and explain why I believe that it is appropriate to discuss the content of these hacked discussions. Note, these hacked discussions are different than the photoshopped imagery found in 2013 on an unprotected Skeptical Science website showing several Skeptical Science team members with their faces superimposed on Nazi soldiers, with John Cook as Heinrich Himmler. According to Rob Honeycutt of Skeptical Science, those images were prepared as an in-group joke to make fun of a climate skeptic who appeared on another of their lists and were not intended for the public. The discussions and hacked conversations like those in the Wikipedia releases, those of Emmanuel Macron's hacked conversations, or even the Climategate emails, are legitimately in the public interest. There are at least three reasons for this. One, the hacked forum reveals a Skeptical Science, a foreign advocacy group in collaboration with the Center for American Progress, a D.C.-based progressive advocacy group, and properly obtain congressional testimony in advance from several U.S. scientists that were engaged to help Democrats in the House to impeach the testimony of these scientists. Second, the leaked discussions reveal a coordinated effort to lobby U.S. elected officials by a foreign-based entity. Now, this is a story I encourage you just to go and read the whole story. There's more to it. But here's the point. The Center for American Progress, one of the nastiest progressive organizations in the world, founded by John Podesta, Mr. Climate Science himself, technocrat extraordinaire from the Trilateral Commission, engaged an offshore, that is a non-U.S. entity, to attack U.S. climate skeptics, legitimate scientists, to the extent that there was no defense whatsoever possible against this foreign entity, who was not registered, by the way, as a lobbyist in Washington. There's no way to put a legal hold on the activities of skeptical science because it's outside the boundaries of the United States. To say this is underhanded is an understatement, but it has been very effective to get people bounced out of universities, that is, legitimate scientists who have a long track record of success and scholarship. Their findings are simply not acceptable and not allowable by the climate change fear-mongering groups like the Center for American Progress. Well, nevertheless, the next story is interesting because it shows one organization is standing up to this type of censorship. A medical association sues Representative Adam Schiff for censorship. I wrote at the top of this article, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS for short, is suing Representative Adam Schiff over his demanding that Twitter remove the vaccine movies, Vaxxed, and Shoot 'Em Up, The Truth About Vaccines. Twitter obeyed Schiff and removed the videos. Schiff's actions are patently unconstitutional, and the lawsuit intends to hold him accountable. This is the press release from AAPS, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. I have been privileged, by the way, to address this organization on Technocracy, and they were very receptive to hearing what I had to say. A lot of them really understand what's going on in the medical community especially. But their press release states, the internet is supposed to provide an open access to information to people of different opinions, and algorithms for search engines such as Google were originally designed to rank entries on the basis of traffic to a site. It was democratic in the sense that people voted with their mouse clicks. Freedom of information is a threat to oppressors. Communist China has erected the Great Firewall. Google's secret Project Dragonfly would collect data about people's searches that could be used for facilitating human rights abuses and would purge links to websites prohibited in China. Because of political pressure, it has reportedly been terminated, for now, although a shareholder resolution to stop it failed. In the U.S., online service providers have broad protections from legal liability for content created by the users of their services under the Communication Decency Act of 1996, which added Section 230 to the Communications Act of 1934. This permits entities like Facebook, Twitter, and Google to publish others' contents without reviewing it for criminality or other potential legal issues. There are concerns that it protects pornography and sex trafficking. On June 13, 2019, the House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, held a hearing on technology that allows the creation of fake videos. At the outset, Schiff challenged the CDA immunity enjoyed by Interactive Computer Services, apparently intending to pressure services such as Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Twitter to comply with his position on access to information he deems inappropriate for public access. In early 2019, Schiff contacted leading Interactive Computer Services, including Google, Facebook, and Amazon, to encourage them to totally deplatform or discredit what Schiff asserted to be inaccurate information on vaccines. He then posted the letters and press release on the House.gov website. In response to Schiff's letter, Amazon removed the popular videos, Vaxxed and Shoot 'Em Up, The Truth About Vaccines, from its platform for streaming videos, depriving members of the public of convenient access. Under a policy announced in May 2019, Twitter includes a pro-government disclaimer placed above search results for an AAPS article on vaccine mandates. Quote, know the facts. To make sure you get the best information on vaccination, resources are available from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Close quote. The implication is that if information is not on a government website, then it is somehow less credible. On Facebook, a search for an AAPS article on vaccines, which previously would lead directly to the AAPS article, now produces search results containing links to the World Health Organization, the National Institutes of Health, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that is, the CDC. Visits to the AAPS website have declined significantly since March 2019, both in absolute terms and relative to the decline that would result from a story's losing its recency. On August 9, 2019, Amazon suddenly announced the termination of AAPS after 10 years' participation from the Amazon Associates Program, which by its own description is one of the largest affiliate networks in the world to enable website owners to earn commissions based on their traffic. AAPS is not anti-vaccine, but rather supports informed consent based on an understanding of the full range of medical, legal, and economic considerations relevant to vaccinations and any other medical intervention, which inevitably involves risks as well as benefits. For two decades, AAPS has published informative articles pertaining to vaccinations, which continue to draw visitors even years later. Schiff creates an arbitrary binary divide, simplistically labeling all speech on vaccinations as either pro-vaccination or anti-vaccination, with the latter taken to mean, quote, anti-science or unintelligent and uneducated and thus unworthy of public access. The World Health Organization has declared vaccine hesitancy to be a major public health concern. Thus, any information, however valid scientifically, that might influence a person to decline a vaccine could be labeled a public health threat and censored. AAPS notes efforts by the AMA and others to declare that many controversial issues are public health threats, such as gun violence, climate change, or lack of convenient and affordable access to abortion or sex change surgery. A precedent to censor speech on vaccine adverse events has broad implications. Well, we give a tip of the hat to AAPS for standing up to this gross censorship, and we should all support their efforts to take Representative Adam Schiff to the woodshed over this. He should know better. Well, he probably does know better. But it is apparent that Representative Adam Schiff has no respect for the Constitution, much less the First Amendment of the Constitution. If he did, he never would have posted such a letter on the government website. This is a violation of the First Amendment, by the way, because he has no business meddling in the issue of censorship. If anything, he should be taking these big companies to task for suppressing stories like this. Another great story I'd like to direct your attention to is written by a new contributor to Technocracy News and Trends, Jacob Nordengard. He's a PhD from Sweden who has written a book called Rockefeller, a tremendous book that Technocracy News and Trends will offer at some point. It's only available in Europe at this point, not all countries there either. But if you live in Sweden, it certainly is. But I believe this is a book that needs to be brought to the United States, and probably the sooner the better. But Jacob writes an article that I titled Technocracy, the Digital Panopticon of the World Economic Forum. And this is really an excellent article. I just encourage you to read every word of it. I wrote at the top of this, the World Economic Forum is totally supporting all of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. You know those as the SDGs, by the way, aka technocracy. Here is an A to Z analysis of each sustainable development goal and what they really mean. Please take time to read through each point, listen to each short video. There's many videos that are posted in here, and then share as widely as possible. The article starts out a week before World Economic Forum's 2020 meeting. The report, Unlocking Technology for the Global Goals, was released by WEF's Global Future Council Working Group on 4IR, or Global Public Goods. The report, written in collaboration with an audit and consulting firm, PwC, reviews how advanced technologies of the Fourth Industrial Revolution will contribute to the meeting of the objectives of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. The work is part of WEF's new initiative, Frontier 2030, led by Danish Anne-Marie Larsen, who also contributed to Klaus Schwab's book, Shaping the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Noteworthy is that six of the seven main authors of the report are women. Big Mother coming to our rescue? The world, if it all goes according to plan, is to be completely transformed over the course of a decade. Just like Marie Strong at the first Stockholm Conference in 1972, the United Nations claims that we have only 10 years to save the world, and both the UN and WEF have dubbed the next 10 years as the Decade of Action. This campaign is very well coordinated and includes governments, international organizations, and representatives of civil society. Also on board are the big tech giants, who all see the great opportunities for profit. Read tens or even hundreds of billions of dollars in, quote, saving and improving the world, close quote, all according to WEF's principle of public-private partnership, originating with Mussolini, implemented in Sweden, and successfully propagated internationally by David Rockefeller. Public-private partnerships. As stated in the Unlocking Technology for the Global Goals, quote, the United Nations 17 Global Goals give a blueprint for what we globally and collectively must do if we are to end extreme poverty, protect our natural environment, revert climate change, and create a more sustainable, equal, and prosperous future for all. So what is this technological solution all about? The report gives an overview on how 4IR could help reach the 17 SDGs. This is a plan that promises utopia, but offers only technocracy as a solution, with no other options available. This, by the way, is what I have stated for years now, that there is no other solution offered. Every road today leads to technocracy. The article continues, the report presents a technocratic society where the whole world is to be controlled and governed with the help of AI, satellites, robotics, drones, and the Internet of Things, and with artificial food on the menu. A global digital panopticon where all human activities are to be recorded, analyzed, and corrected with the help of social credits. Yes, even here in the West. The Fourth Industrial Revolution is now openly displayed as a powerful weapon against the masses, with a digital god, that is AI, who will judge and control us in real time. This is the ultimate form of social engineering and a serious threat to the freedom of humanity. In this vision, man is also meant to be altered to become something other than a human being. According to Hans Schulenhuber, it is conceivable, on the other hand, that geocybernetics will allow completely different or complementary courses that lie more in the realm of social management. Here, the demographic issue overrides other themes. Is there an optimal number of human beings to be supported by the ecosphere? What is the right mix of condensing people in cities and dispersing them across landscapes? Well, the World Economic Forum to the rescue. Here are some examples of many Fourth Industrial Revolution measures for goals 1 to 16 proposed by the World Economic Forum, with examples from YouTube by corporations marketing their version of each solution. And it starts out, not surprisingly, with goal number 1, no poverty. Now, there are 17 sustainable development goals. I'm not going to read the analysis of each one. but I hope that you are motivated to go and read them yourself and understand what the United Nations is doing with this sustainable development goal business. What's it all about? You need to know, because it's coming to a neighborhood near you real soon, if it hasn't already. Well, with a little more comment about what's going on in England right now, I'll point out just one more time that the techno-populist movement is going wild in England right now. I've been writing about techno-populism for some time. The populist movement, where citizens believe that they have secured a voice in government, has been very successful across Europe in bringing new people to power to represent the people. But then when those candidates get into office, they seem to be leaning immediately to technocracy. And this is what's happening with Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He was successful at breaking the ties between Britain and the European Union through the Brexit movement. But as soon as that was done, he turned back to his green roots to implement something equivalent to the Green New Deal that's been offered here in America by AOC and Senator Edward Markey. He's taken a completely green turn. One of the things that's happening in London right now is that they're deploying facial recognition cameras across the city. This is complete draconian surveillance of every citizen that will set foot in London. And this will spread across the country as well. But the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, also intends to be a leader in climate change policies that will turn the entire economic system in London and across Britain upside down to support the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and the green economy. And I think lastly, just to point out how absolutely off the wall the climate change issue is right now, I ran a story last week that I titled Climate Change Solved by, quote, letting the human race become extinct, close quote. You simply cannot make this up. This story originated out of Great Britain, and a Cambridge academic has proposed a radical new way to solve climate change. This article states a Cambridge academic has proposed a radical new way to solve climate change. How? Well, letting humanity become extinct. Patricia McCormick, a professor of continental philosophy at Anglia Ruskin University in Great Britain, has just released her new book, The A Human Manifesto, which will officially be launched in Cambridge today. That was February 5. The book argues that due to the damage done to other living creatures on Earth, we should start gradually phasing out reproduction. But rather than offering a bleak look at the future of humanity, it has generated discussion due to its joyful and optimistic tone as it sets out a positive view for the future of Earth without mankind. It also touches on several hot-button topics, from religion and veganism to the concept of identity politics, tying these into how the creation of a hierarchical world among humans has left us blind to the destruction we are causing to our habitat and other forms of life. Speaking to Cambridgeshire Live, Professor McCormick outlined how she came to this point of view and how these ideas are not as provocative as they may initially sound. She said, quote, I arrived at this idea from a couple of directions. I was introduced to philosophy due to my interest in feminism and queer theory, so reproductive rights have long been an interest to me. This led me to learn more about animal rights, which is when I became a vegan. She continues, the basic premise of this book is that we're in the age of the Anthropocene. Humanity has caused mass problems, and one of them is creating this hierarchical world where white, male, heterosexual, and able-bodied people are succeeding, and people of different races, genders, sexualities, and those with disabilities are struggling to get that. Again, she continues, quote, this is where the idea of dismantling identity politics comes in. They deserve rights not because of what they are, but because they are. The book also argues that we need to dismantle religion and other overriding powers like the church of capitalism or the cult of self, as it makes people act upon enforced rules rather than respond thoughtfully to the situations in front of them. Close quote. The central argument in the A Human Manifesto could be boiled down to this. Mankind is already enslaved to the point of zombiedom by capitalism, and because of the damage this has caused, phasing out reproduction is the only way to repair the damage done to our world. Additionally, humanity has to see it isn't the single living dominant force, but first it needs to dismantle an established hierarchy amongst itself. This argument has not received as much disagreement as you might expect. Professor McCormick continued, quote, "Everyone's okay with the ideas in this book until they're told they have to act on it. There's a lot of agreement that these changes might work for the world, but when it imposes on people, it becomes proactive." Well, I have just a couple of things to say to Professor McCormick. Professor, if you think the only way to solve climate change is to allow the human race to become extinct, you have lost your ever-loving mind. However, you are showing the radical side of greenism in Great Britain itself. There have been more crackpot theories and ideas come out of Great Britain in recent years than in almost any other country on the face of our planet. And you simply are at the back of the line in a long list of crazy ideas that have come out of green hysteria. And to Technocracy News readers, I hope that you will get a good understanding of what's going on in Great Britain, because it's coming to America as well. We have a limited time frame in which to resist these things and set people's minds straight so that they don't fall into traps like Professor McCormick is offering. Let's just let the entire human race go extinct. And that will solve it, all right. No more carbon-producing units on planet Earth. That's what humans are, you know. We're carbon-based units. Well, that's a dead end none of us want to experience for sure. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next week.